Good morning. Today's daf in Sukkah is Lamed Hey. We are starting with the Mishnah Lamed Almed Beis, and we're up to the Esrog. So here in the course of the third parak of the Masechta, we've gone through the Dalaminim. We have so far covered three of the four. And now today we begin Min Dalid, the fourth of the Dalaminim. And that, of course, is the Esrog. The Esrog is going to have probably the most amount of details regarding any of the Minim in terms of that which will disqualify it, that which would qualify it. The Esrog is notably different than the other Minim. So first of all, as we already pointed out earlier in this parak, so the Esrog is not bound with the other Minim. When the Torah introduces us to the Esrog, it says Pre-Eitz Hadar, and then the next word is not Vikapos Tamarim, but rather the next word is Kapos Tamarim, which comes to educate us and teach us that the Esrog, although it's being held with the other of the Minim, but nevertheless, it's not bundled together with the other Minim. Just yesterday, we saw machlokas between the Rishonim, between the Bahag and Rabbeinu Tam, whether or not they have to be picked up together, or can they be picked up separately. But that's, of course, working with the position that Lulav Ein Tzarech Eged. But nevertheless, as far as the Esrog is concerned, it's not with the other Minim. But, of course, it's Ma'akev, meaning if you don't have the Esrog, so then you're not going to have fulfilled your obligation. So, and the other most noteworthy distinction between the Esrog and the other Minim is the Esrog is a fruit. It's an actual food. The other Minim are twigs. The palm branch, the myrtle branch, the willow branch, those are all twigs. Obviously, they have to have leaves on them and the configuration of the leaves. So we spent a lot of time discussing, but they're just simply branches. But as it relates to the Esrog is an actual fruit. Now, that's going to make a huge difference in terms of the halachas, because once we're dealing with fruit and fruit of Eretz Yisrael, so fruit of Eretz Yisrael are subject to many different halachas. Truma, Meister Sheni, etc., etc. So that's why we're going to be discussing over the course of the next couple of dafim a lot of the halachas of Hafreshes Truma. Hafreshes Truma is a Meister, because the Esrog is a fruit and therefore subject to an entire world of halachas that the other minim are simply not subject to. Also Shemitah and Kedusha Shvius, which is not coming up in today's daf, but that's coming up soon enough. And that's another consideration as it relates to the Esrog, because it's a fruit. So there is much to consider over here regarding the Esrog. And without further ado, let's begin. The Mishnah begins, Esrog HaGazal VaYavish Pasol. If the Esrog is either stolen or it's dry, it's going to be Pasol. Again, where this is what we're used to. This is the universal psalm that applies to all of the Dalaminim. So if it's dry, it's a lack of Hadar. And in fact, by the Esrog, the Torah describes as Pre-Eitz Hadar. If it is, if it's stolen, so then it will be disqualified on the first day because it lacks Lachem. The Torah demands that we have to be the owners of it. And if we were to steal it, we are not the owners of it. And for the subsequent days of Sukkot, it is going to be disqualified because of Mitzvah Baba Avera. That's as per the first discussion that we had in our parak. Shil Asher V'Shalini Dachas Pasol. If the Esrog comes from either a Asherah tree, a tree that was worshipped as a Avodah Zarah, or Irahani Dachas, so it's going to be Pasol. And again, a point that we made numerous times already by the other Minim. Once it comes from these locations, these sourcings, so then there's an obligation to burn it. And once there's an obligation to burn it, so then it does not have the requisite shear. Shel Arla Pasol. Here we begin. So now we're going to begin with a series of halachas that apply to the Esrog that do not apply to the other Minim, because the Esrog is a fruit. Number one is Arla. Arla, after you plant a tree for the first 3 years subsequent to the planting of the tree, all the fruit that come off of that tree in the really early stages of the tree, meaning the first 3 years, so that fruit is going to be aser ba'achila uvehana. You can't eat that fruit, nor can you get benefit from that fruit. Rashi writes over here, seeing the Rashi inside. So Rashi says, when it comes to Arla, shall Arla v'shal truma tamei apostol. Rashi does not write over here. Okay, let's wait. Sorry. Let's wait till we get to the Gemara in terms of an explanation, in terms of why it is that the fruit of Arla is going to be apostle, meaning, okay, so you can't eat it and you can't get benefit from it. Yeah, but all we're doing is we're being Mekayim and Mitzvah, and let's remind each other. I'm just setting us up for the Gemara, but we'll discuss this in more detail when we get to the Gemara. So let's remind each other that if you're doing a Mitzvah, so you're not violating Isuri Hana'a. Isuri Hana'a is that you're not allowed to get tangible benefit from it. But this is not a tangible benefit. Doing a Mitzvah, Mitzvah's Lav Lehenes Netnu, that's not considered a tangible benefit. Okay, so when we get to the Gemara, we're going to explain why it is that the usage of an Arla Esrog is no good. shel truma tameya pasul. If the esrog was truma tameya, so then it would be pasul. So remember, and this is just a crash course, that truma is the hafrasha that the farmer does. The first 2% of his produce goes to the kohen. There are actually other revenue streams of revenue of truma that go to the kohen from the levi, from meiser rishon, which is called trumas meiser. But just to focus on the truma gedola. So the first 2% of the farmer's produce goes to the kohen. That's what's called truma gedola. Truma is given to the kohen and can only be eaten by the kohen. The truma has to be preserved and made sure that it does not become tameh. If the truma becomes tameh, or grammatically correct, tameah, so then the kohen is not allowed to eat the truma. However, what the kohen can do with truma tameah is that he can use it for other benefits. Let's say, for example, it's olive oil, and it became tameah. So the kohen's not allowed to eat it, but the kohen can make fuel out of it. He could use it for illumination. So so it is not asur bahana, yet the Mishnah tells us that if it's truma tameya, if the esrog is truma and it becomes tameya, so then it's pasul. However, shel truma tahara lo yitovim nato kasher, if it's truma tahara, so lichatchila, a kohen should not be using this truma tahara esrog for the mitzvah of dalaminim. Bid the evid, if he does so post facto, would be acceptable, but lechatchila shouldn't do so. Why not? So again, let's wait for the Gemara. The Gemara is going to go on to explain. Shel demai. If let's say the esrog was purchased from an Alma Aretz, so this is a common discussion that occurs throughout Shas, any produce purchased from an Alma Aretz is going to be suspect. The suspicion is that the Alma Aretz, being that he is not learned and not fluent in the halachas of Trumas HaMaisos, did not separate Trumas HaMaisos. Therefore, the Chachamim demanded that anyone who purchases produce from an Alma Aretz, even if he tells you that he took off Trumas HaMaisos, still there's a requirement to once again take off Trumas HaMaisos. The status of that produce prior to you separating Trumas HaMaisos, it's called Demai. An entire Masechta in Shas dedicated to this topic in Seder Zrayim, called, of course, Demai. So if your esrog is demai, meaning purchased from Alma Aretz, and you didn't separate Trumas HaMaisos, Beis Shammai Posel, Beis Hillel Machshirin, so Machlok is between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, as to whether or not you could use it on Sukkos. And once again, we're going to explain that in the Gemara. Shel Meister Sheini B'Yerushalayim Lo Yitavim Nata Kasher. If it's Meister Sheini produce that you brought into Yerushalayim, again, just a reminder, that after having separated Trumah, the farmer then takes off Meister Rishon, the next 10%, gives that to the Levi, the next 10%, so depending on the year in the Shemitah cycle, in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle, so the next 10% is going to be called Meister Sheni. The owner of that produce now takes his Meister Sheni, brings it to Yerushalayim, and eats it in Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to eat Meister Sheni outside Yerushalayim. Let's say that you took off Meister Sheni from your esrog tree, so you now have a collection of esrogim that are Meister Sheni. So you brought them into Yerushalayim. Can you be no-tell? Can you take that as your dalaminim? So the Mishnah says, alechatchila no, b'diavad yes. And again, in terms of an explanation, well, let's wait till we get to the Gemara, where the Gemara is going to explain why. Alta chazazis al rubo. Okay. And the Mishnah now is going to be transitioning. So after going through many halachic considerations, because the esrog is a fruit and because it's fruit of Eretz Yisrael, so we just covered numerous halachic considerations. Now the Gemara is going to be talking about physical imperfections that exist within the esrog. If there is blisters that are growing over the majority of the esrog, not la pitmaso, if the pitum, the tip, the top of the esrog is removed, niklaf, if the esrog is peeled, nistak, if it is cracked, nikev v'chaser. Rashi understands this as one phrase, meaning it is not just punctured, but punctured, and a piece of the esrog is actually missing. So kol shu pasul, in any of these cases, the esrog would be pasul, meaning based on this physical imperfection of the esrog, it's going to be pasul. Rashi says that under these circumstances, it lacks hadar, it lacks the beauty. There could be an argument, a strong argument that one can make, that if it's missing a section, so then it is an incomplete esrog, and therefore will fail on the front of being not a complete esrog. The Torah says it has to be likachtam, likichatama, it has to be complete, and once it's missing a little bit, so then it's incomplete. You can make that argument. Natal chazazis, Alta chazasus amiyuto. Now the Mishnah over here is going to be contrasting. Let's say that there are some blisters growing on the esrog, but not over the majority of the surface area of the esrog, but only over a minority. So natal ukso, or let's say not the top of the esrog is removed, but rather the stem of the esrog is removed, the part where it's connected to the tree. Nike velo chaser kol shu, let's say it's just simply punctured, but none of the esrog is actually missing. So kosher. So in these circumstances, it would be kosher. Esrog hakushi pasul, a black esrog would be disqualified. V'ayar kakarte. Now, what if it's a green esrog? Rabbi Meir machshir Rabbi Yehuda posel. A machlokes between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether it's kosher or pasul. Recall, remember the Gemara that we did back on Lamed Aleph, where the Gemara quoted this Mishnah, and the Gemara said that the svar behind Rabbi Yehuda that says it's disqualified, not necessarily because it is a function of hiddur, of beauty, but rather because the green is considered something which is underdeveloped and unripened. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda apostles a green esrog. Sheer esrog, what is the size of the esrog? So hakatan, so first we're going to go off with the minimum size of an esrog. Rabbi Meir amar ke'egos, Rabbi Yehuda amar ke'beitza. Machlokes atanayim, whether the smallest size is going to be either an egos or the size of an egg, the volume of an egg. Over gadol, now what is the largest size of an esrog? So here we're going to give the largest size. Now, interestingly, we did not do that with the other minim. Meaning by the other minim, we only gave the smallest size requirement. But there was no maximum. So over here by the esrog, there is a maximum size in which it cannot exceed. Kadesh yocha shnayim biyado, div Rabbi Yehuda. So according to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, you have to be able to hold two esrogim in one hand. If the esrog is so big that I wouldn't be able to hold it and its equivalent in one hand, it would be disqualified, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yossi, Amar Afilo Echa B'Shtei Yadav, and Rabbi Yossi says, even if it takes me two hands to hold an esrog, so that would be acceptable, that would be fine. Again, recalling a Gemara that we did a couple days ago, back on Daf Lamed Aleph, the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda that says that the esrog cannot be larger, where two of them would be unable to fit in one hand. So that was, says the Gemara, not a function of Hadar, but a function of just simply being able to handle the Esrog. Meaning, remember that your Lulav has to be in your right hand, your Esrog has to be in your left hand. And there are some times where by accident you switch hands, and now you want to be able to switch the Lulav and the Esrog if the Esrog is just simply too big, where I wouldn't be able to switch around the Lulav and Esrog while handling them. So the Esrog may fall, a part of it may break, and it will become disqualified. So that, the Gemara explained earlier, is the svar behind Rav Yehuda, where the Rav Yehuda demands that the esrog has to be able to not only to be in your hand, but have to be able to hold something else at the same time for this concern that we just articulated. We are on the very top of Lamed Hamad Aleph. We're starting with the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan. Pre-Eitz Hadar. So in the Torah's description of the esrog, it describes it as a pre-Eitz Hadar. Now the classic interpretation is that it's a beautiful fruit. Eitz shitam eitzo pir yoshava. But by virtue of the fact that the Torah puts together, not only in the same phrase, but next to one another, the word pre and the word eitz, so the Gemara darshins that the fruit and the tree have to have the same taste. Again, I've already shared with you my amazement over this idea, right? I've not been, quite frankly, empirically, I've never bitten into an esrog branch, not fully understanding what that means, that the eitz and the pre tastes the same. But the Gemara assumes that that's in fact the case when it comes to the esrog. Haviomer is the esrog, and that helps us identify and be able to convert the Lashon HaTorah to the Lashon Chachamim. The Lashon HaTorah is pre Eitz Hadar, and now we've defined it as being an esrog. And a clue to get us to that point is by virtue of the fact that it says pre Eitz Hadar. Again, I know I made this point before, but I'm certainly happy reiterating and reminding each other. According to the Rambam writes, he writes it in his Akdama to Seder Zrayim, that the Gemara not for a moment ever entertained the idea that the Pre-Eitz Hadar is any other fruit, meaning we have a Mesorah. We have a tradition going all the way back to Moshe Mi-Sinai, that the definition of the Pre-Eitz Hadar is in fact the Esrog, right? Why doesn't the Torah use the word Esrog? It's a wonderful question. I don't have a great answer. But nevertheless, the Rambam writes that as part of the Mesorah, we knew this all along. And even though the Rambam writes, and again, I apologize for not quoting the Rambam inside, but even though the Rambam writes, the Gemara seems to be entertaining other species, This is not a serious entertainment of the Gemara. The Gemara is just looking for Ramazim, hints and allusions to the fact that the Pre-Eitz Hadar is in fact the Esrog. But even without the Gemara, we would have known through the Mesora that the Pre-Eitz Hadar is in fact the Esrog. Continuing in the Gemara. The Ema Pilpilin, so the Gemara now suggests that maybe what the Torah wants it to take as a Pre-Eitz Hadar is a peppercorn. Kidetanya, and the Gemara says, and why would I have suggested that of all the fruits out there? So the Gemara goes on to explain, Hayu Rabbi Meir Omer, Mimashma Shanamar Natatam Kalates Eina Yodeshu Eitz Ma'achal. Matam Alomer Eitz Ma'achal, when the Torah introduces us to the Isra of Arla. So the Torah says that you're going to plant a tree, and the Torah says it's Eitz Ma'achal, a tree in which you can eat the fruit. Now, of course you can eat the fruit, because in a moment the Torah is going to tell us that you're, for the first 3 years, you're not allowed to eat the fruit. So of course it's an edible fruit. So why does the Torah say Eitz Ma'achal, Eitz Shetam, Eitz Opir Yoshava? Because what the Torah wants to teach us is that the Isser Arla, in addition to applying to all fruits, but we're going to add another quote-unquote fruit, which you very well may have thought is not a fruit. And that is Haviyom Rezo Pilpul, and it's the peppercorn. The peppercorn is to be treated like a fruit. Lamdecha Sha'apilpulin Chayavim Ba'arla. So that means to say that the peppercorn is in fact considered Arla. Rashi writes over here, I would have easily entertained the idea that the peppercorn is not considered Arla because it's not a tree. It's a bush. It's low to the ground. So you could have easily entertained this idea that it's not subject to Arla, just as a header, which I should have opened up with. Arla only applies to trees and not to vegetables. So over here, you could have made the argument that the peppercorn, which is coming from a low-lying bush. So maybe it's not subject to Arla. That's the Havamina. So that's why the Torah has to go out of its way to teach us via this drasha that the peppercorn is in fact subject to Arla. Ve'in Eretz Yisrael chaseira klum. Eretz Yisrael is not missing anything. She'nemer lo sechta kol bar. So fine. So what we just come to discover is that the peppercorn is Eitzo upir yoshava, that both the fruit it produces and the branch are basically producing the same taste. So if you're telling me that the esrog is the esrog because eitz shetam upir yoshava, so the same thing can be said regarding the peppercorn. So maybe the Torah wants us to take the peppercorn on Sukkos. So the Gemara says mishum de lo efshar. So the Gemara gives an explanation. Well, it'll be really difficult. Hechi navid nitkon chada. What do we expect it to do? To take one peppercorn? So one peppercorn you're holding between your fingers. So chada lo minkor lekichasa. Right? It's really hard, right? In other words, by the esrog people, we'll see your esrog. By the peppercorn that is basically situated between your two fingers, no one's going to see it. Ninko treo tlas. Okay, so maybe take a handful. So take a handful of peppercorns. So Echad Amarachmanav Velo Shnayim. Ushlosha Peros. No, it says pre has to be one. Hilkoch lo efshar. So therefore, the Gemara says it's just simply impossible. Again, the Rambam would tell you that even though the Gemara gave an answer, but the Gemara never really seriously entertained that we're using anything other than Esrog. The Gemara just over here is providing, in addition to the Mesora that we have, the Gemara is also providing arguments as well. Rebbe Omer Al Tikre Hadar Ela Hadir. Again, the Gemara now is going to give other explanations in terms of how we can connect the pre-Eitz Hadar to the Esrog. Rebbe says that the word Hadar could be associated with the word deer. Deer is a pen, an animal pen. Madir, a corral, if you will. Madir ze yeshba gedolim gatanim tamimim bali momim hachanami yeshba gedolim gatanim tamimim bali momim. Now, if you go into an animal corral, so you will find all different types of animals, big, small, blemish, non-blemish. Same thing with an esrog tree. You're going to find on it big fruit, small fruit, fruit that are blemished and fruit that are non-blemished. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Atu sharperos leis bay gedolim gatanim tamimim bali momim. I'll go to any other fruit tree. You're not going to find the same phenomena. Like the Gemara is basically saying, that's not evidence of the fact that it's an esrog tree. So Ela Achi Kamar. So the Gemara says, fine. But this is the intent. Ashabim Ketanos Adayim Gedolim Kayamim. So the Gemara says that the esrog tree, you have a unique feature that you don't have by other fruit tree. By other fruit tree, what happens is that when the fruit grow, so either they're going to get picked or they're going to fall off. But that's it. They are not staying on the tree. And then next year, we start again with the flowering and the budding. However, when it comes to the esrog tree, if you do not pick off the esrog from the tree this year, it remains on the tree and it will just simply, it will simply grow and continue to grow and get larger. So this is a phenomena that you have by the esrog tree. You do not have it by another tree. And that is the now the comparison between the Esrog tree and the pen and the coral, corral, in which you have animals that are born this year, animals from previous years. And in that regard, that helps us identify that it is in fact the Esrog tree. Rabbi Abahu Mar Al Tikra Hadar Ella Hadar. So Rabbi Abahu is going to give a he's going to make the same point, but from an etymological standpoint, he's just simply interpreting the word a little bit differently. Not Hadar from the word deer, that was Rabbi's drasha, but according to Rabbi Abahu, the word Hadar from the word dira, residence. So Davar Shadar Bilana Mashana Lashana. The Esrog resides on the tree for multiple years. Okay, and as Rashi points out over here, it's the same point. It's just a question of etymology and how to understand the word Hadar. Benazai Omer Al Tikra Hadar Ella Idur. Shekem B'Lashon Yevani Korin Lamayim Idur. Ve'ezu Shegado Al Komayim Ave Omer Ze Esrog. The Esrog has a quality in which it could basically grow in any water. Irrigated field, non-irrigated field. In this regard, it has a vegetable-like quality to it. When we get to the beginning of Masechta Rosh Hashanah, you will see that the Gemara over here by the Esrog tree is going to grapple with the idea that the Esrog is on one hand a tree, certainly. On the other hand, it has vegetable-like qualities to it. And that's why for a moment, the Gemara there in Rosh Hashanah will be a little bit struggling in terms of which category to put it in. Put it in as a fruit, put it in as a vegetable. When we get there, you'll understand the point a lot better. But meanwhile, over here, the word Hadar comes from the Greek word hydra. And just like it can grow in any water, so too, that gives us another piece of evidence that we're talking specifically about the Esrog tree. I'm sure it is a curiosity to everyone listening in terms of how it is that we've just discovered a Greek word in the Torah, right? The Greek language seems to have come after the Torah was given. And so the idea that the Torah over here is going to be referencing, alluding to a Greek word, that's certainly curiosity. So I saw a comment by the Shla. It's a really interesting comment. And that is that he notes that when Akash Baruch Hu mixed up the languages, By Migdal Bavel. So what happens is that as part of the Tarovas, as part of the mixture of the languages, so many Hebrew words went into the other languages. So it's not necessarily to say that the Torah, when saying the word Hadar, is a reference to Hydra, which is a Greek language, but just that the Greek language has incorporated in it a couple of Hebrew words. That's the Shlaz comment over here. Okay. He's not writing a commentary in Sukkah, but anyway, the Shla is quoted as saying such an idea. So here the Gemara repeats the point that we've seen already numerous times. The idea that the Asherah and the Esrog of Ir Nidachas needs to be burnt, therefore lacks the requisite shear, since it does not, since it's going to be burnt, we view it as if it's already burnt, and therefore it lacks the shear. Let we continue. Arla Pasal. Okay, here we start now. With a major discussion, and that is that the Esrog that comes off of a tree in the first 3 years has the status of Arla, and the Mishnah says you cannot use it for the mitzvah of Esrog. Why not? So my time at Pligi by Rabbi Chia bar Avin Ravasi. So the Gemara now is going to present the Machlokas Amoraim. Chadam alifishim bahetar achila. One is because you can't eat it. Meaning that as part of the qualification of having a kasher Esrog, it has to be a fruit, an edible fruit. By virtue of the fact that we're not allowed to eat Arla, so therefore it lacks an edibility to it, and therefore the way Rashi understands it, it's not lachem, meaning that the lachem description of the Torah by the Dalminim has to tell me that it's yours. By a fruit, part of the definition of yours means that you have to be able to eat it. V'chana mar lefi shein ba din mamon. Now another way to say it is that not that you can't eat it, but rather because it has no monetary value to you. Consider the Arla, the fruit of Arla, you're not allowed to eat it. It's asur b'achila uvehanan. We're not allowed to get benefit from it. So therefore, because we're not allowed to get benefit from it, it has no monetary value towards us. And for that reason, it lacks the criteria of lachem. So the Gemara now presents what seems to be a machlokas amaraim, why the Arla Esrog cannot be used on Sukkos, either because you can't eat it or because it has no monetary value. And the Gemara right now sets it up. Now, the way the Gemara presents the machlokas, it sounds like they're just simply having a debate in terms of what's a critical criteria in which disqualifies the esrog of arla. Is it a lack of edibility or is it a lack of monetary value? So the Gemara says, well, let's go back to our Mishnah, because the truth of the matter is that our Mishnah does not seem to indicate that. Tanan, shel truma tameya, puzzle. That the esrog of truma tameya is going to be puzzle. Now, bishlam laman darma lefi shein ba heter achila shapir. So if you're saying that a lack of edibility is going to disqualify it, so the Gemara says, I totally understand. Truma tameya, the kohen's not allowed to eat it. So, but elaman darma lefi shein ba din mamon amai. Hari misika tachas tafshilo. But I don't understand. Truma tameya is not lacking in monetary value. It has value. Because what the Kohen could do with his Truma Temea is that he could put it under his pot in order to fuel the fire. Truma Temea can be used. You could benefit from Truma Temea. So I don't understand if, in fact, the criteria in which is going to disqualify it is a lack of monetary value. Well, Truma Temea does not lack that. So Truma Temea has monetary value. So the Gemara says, and the Mishnah says without flinching that Truma Temea Esrog is going to be possible. So what we have to do now is that we have to modify, we have to reshape the machlokas that we just presented. Ella. Beheter achila. Kule amalo pliga de be'inan. So the Gemara says that when it comes to a heter achila, so we have an agreement that you need a heter achila, meaning the starting point is that you have to be able to eat it. That's going to be step number one. And ki pligi bedin mamon. And then the other question becomes, is that in addition to there being a heter achila, does it also have to have heter mamon as well? Does it also have to have monetary value? Marsav heter achila beinan din mamon lo beinan, or marsav din mamon nami beinan. Ah, and so the Gemara says is that now that becomes a machlokas. Meaning, step number one, in order to say that an esrog would be kosher for the mitzvah of dalaminim, is that you have to be able to eat it. Again, the idea is the Torah says lachem by a pri by definition means that you have to be able to eat it. And then the question becomes, step number two, is there another criteria? Is there another prerequisite? And that is, that doesn't also have to have monetary value. So the Gemara says, okay. And that becomes the machlokas between the Amoraim. That's the machlokas between Rabbi Chiya bar Avin and Rav Asi. Now, we don't have to think that hard because the Gemara is going to present it to us, but let's say it out loud. What would be an example of something where on one hand you can eat it, but it has no monetary value? Good. So my benayu ke benayu meister sheni b'Yerushalayim aliba de Rebbe Meir. So here we go. Right. If you know your halachas of zrayim very well, you would have figured this out. But it's definitely tricky. What's an example of something that you're allowed to eat but has no monetary value? And the answer is meister sheni in Yerushalayim, according to the shita Rebbe Meir. Now, Meister Shein in Yerushalayim, so again, that second 10% in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle. So you bring that to Yerushalayim, it's called Meister Shein. And you eat it in Yerushalayim. Whose money is it? This is a machlokas hatanayim between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Rav Meir says that it's mamon gavo, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's money. You just simply have a right to eat it, but you're not the owner. Masha'ein Kein, according to the Chachamim, it is in fact considered your money. The nafka mina, which the Gemara always says, and Rashi brings it down over here, in terms of the litmus test to see whether it's your money or not your money, is can you take it and can you be mekadesh and isha? Can you go to a woman and present her this meister sheni and say, hare at mekadeshes li b'meister sheni zu? Would that work? If you maintain like Rav Meir that it's not your money, it's a kadesh baruch hu's, and you're just simply given the right to eat it, so you can't be mekadesh a woman. According to the Chachamim, it is your money, just regulated in which where you can, quote unquote, spend it, where you can eat and where you cannot eat it, but it's your money. And so once you bring it to Yerushalayim and are mekadesh a woman with it in Yerushalayim, so then it would in fact work. Just parenthetically, I'll note, what if it's Meister Sheni outside of Yerushalayim? Does that considered, according to the Chachamim, is that considered like it has monetary value? Although currently you're not allowed to eat it, but all you need to do is bring it to Yerushalayim and eat it. Good. It's a great question. It happens to be discussed in the Gemara and Kedushin. We're not going to discuss it right now. Right now, let's just sit and focus now on this would be the nafka mina. This would be the practical difference where we have now identified something that you can eat, but according to Rabbi Meir, it's not your money. So now, lamanda, amar lefi shein ba heter achila, hari yesh ba heter achila. So if the only criteria is that the esrog has to be edible, perfect, the esrog is edible. And lamander malefi shemba din mamon meiser sheni mamon gavohu. If the criteria is that it has to be edible, and on top of that, it also has to be yours, so over here, it's not yours, according to Rebbe Meir. And therefore, you will not be Yotze. This now will become the machlokus between the Amoraim of Rav Asi and Rebbe Chiya bar Avin. Tis time to Rav Asi d'amar l'fisha man din mamon, she'ein ba din mamon. So the Gemara says, good. When we first presented the machlokus, we didn't say who said which position. So the Gemara now is going to identify the Amar Rav Asi. It is Rav Asi who says that you need both the ability to eat it and ownership. How do I know that? The Gemara says, because we have a statement of Rav Asi. The Amar Rav Asi, Esrog Shal Meister, Shein L'Divrei Rabbi Meir, Ein Adam Yosei Bo Yidei Chavosu B'Yom Tov L'Divrei Chachamim, Adam Yosei Bo Yidei Chavosu B'Yom Tov Tistayim. So the Gemara says it straight out, that according to Rav Asi, so our Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim, according to Rabbi Meir, so now it's going to be a machlokus as to whether or not, let's start that again. Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim will be a machlokus as to whether or not an esrog of this category is in fact going to be able to be used for dalaminim. So according to Rabbi Meir, you can't. Why? Because for Rabbi Meir, it's not yours. You can eat it, but it's not yours. And according to Rav Asi, I need both criteria. Mashenkin, according to the Chachamim, you can use it. Why? Because you do have both criteria. It is both edible, and on top of that, it's yours. Anyway, what comes out over here is that according to Rav Asi, you need both criteria. And the esrog of the Meister Sheni, machlokus between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether or not you have both criteria. According to Rav Meir, you don't. According to the Chachamim, you do. Okay, good. So that's now it. So it comes out that whether or not the Meister Sheni Esro can be used for Yudal Minim, so our Mishnah says that it cannot. And let's go back to the beginning. The Arla Esrog. So the Arla Esrog is Pasul. Now the reason why it's going to be Pasul is, number one, you can't eat it. Meaning, we could stop the sentence right there. You can't eat it. And that is step number one in terms of identifying whether it would be kosher for the mitzvah of Esrog. On top of that, what we just learned together is that there may be another factor that would disqualify it, and that is that it's not yours. You're not the owner of it. Okay, and that now turns into a machlokes amoraim. And as we just concluded, according to Rav Asi, in order for the Esrog to be kosher, it has to be both edible. And on top of that, also has to be your mamon as well. You have to have financial ownership over it. Okay, gufa. Am Rav Asi Esrog Shal Meister Shein L'Divrei Meir and Adam Yosei Bo Yidei Chavaso B'Yamtov L'Divrei Chachamim Adam Yosei Bo Yidei Chavaso B'Yamtov. Okay, so we're just going to revisit this conclusion of Rav Asi. So we started with the Esrog of Meister Sheni. So we just repeated what we said moments earlier. Master Shal Meister Shein L'Divrei Meir and Adam Yosei Bo Yidei Chavaso B'Pesach L'Divrei Chachamim Adam Yosei Bo Yidei Chavaso B'Pesach. And we're going to now say that what we just said regarding the Esrog of Meister Sheni, we're also going to be saying regarding Matzah of Meister Sheni. So that means to say that any one of the five grains in which you took off Meister Sheni, you're required to take off Meister Sheni, and you brought that grain of Meister Sheni to Yerushalayim prior to Pesach, and you made Matzah out of it, so can you use it for your mitzvah of Matzah? So same discussion. According to Rav Meir, you're allowed to eat it, but it's not yours. According to the Chachamim, you're allowed to eat it, and it's yours. So it now would come out that this is going to be the same debate. Because by matzah, you have to have ownership over the matzah. Where did we ever see by matzah you have to have ownership? Hold that question. We're going to answer that momentarily. And we're going to make the same point regarding dough. Dough of Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim. So according to Rabbi Meir, there is no mitzvah of Hafreshas Chala because it's not yours. And according to the Chachamim, there is a mitzvah of Hafreshas Chala. So the Gemara says, Maskel for Rapapa, Bishlama Isak Sivreshis Ariso Sechem. So I understand that by the dough, there is a requirement that it has to be yours. Why? The Pasuk in Chumash, the Pasuk describing the mitzvah of Chala, says it is the first of your Ariso Sechem. And the suffix of Chaf Mem, that's the possessive. It means it must be yours. So esrog namik siv lachem, mishal lachem. And the esrog also, the Torah uses the possessive language of lachem. It has to be yours. There has to be ownership. Ela matzah miksiv matzaschem. But we do not have a pasuk in Chumash that says that the matzah must be owned by you. So Amar Rabba Bar Shmuel V'Tem Rav Yemar Bar Shamaya Asel Lechem Lechem. So the Gemara says, you're right, we don't have a pasuk, but we do have a gzeira shava. Ksiv hacha lechem oni. So the Torah describing matzah describes it as lechem oni and ksiv hasam. And it says over there, vayaba chacham lechem haaretz. As we turn to the Amud Beis, and by the mitzvah of chala, it says lechem. Zamalahala mishalachem velo mishal meiser avkan mishalachem velo mishal meiser. Okay. And so the gzeira shava tells us that just like there's an ownership requirement by the mitzvah of challah, so too there's an ownership requirement by the mitzvah of matzah as well. Lema misayele. Okay, so according to Rav Asi, now it comes out that anytime there's an ownership requirement by esrog, by challah, by matzah, anytime there's an ownership requirement, so that means that the meiser sheni of this item, of any of these three mitzvahs that we just identified, so the meiser sheni of these items in Yerushalayim, so since according to Rebbe Meir, it's not your money, so therefore you can't be yotzei. The Gemara says, Lema Misayele, it sounds like the following will be a wonderful support. And that is, Isa Shal Meiser Sheni, Peturim Menachala, Div Rebbe Meir. If I've dove Meiser Sheni, so there's no mitzvah of Chala because it's not yours. V'chachamim Ramim Chayevetz B'chala. So, and according to the Chachamim, it would in fact be Chayevin Chala. So this would now support Rav Asi. Now the Gemara says, Lema. Let's suggest it's going to support Rav Asi. To which the Gemara reacts. What do you mean, let's suggest? Lema misayele hihi. What do you mean, it may support Rav Asi? It's exactly what Rav Asi is saying. So, ela midabaha pligi, bahana mi pligi. So the Gemara says, oh well, what we're saying is the following. You're right. This brisa clearly saying that for the dough of Meiser Sheni in Yerushalayim, machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim as to whether or not there's a mitzvah of Afrashas Challah. What we're saying now is that the same would be true regarding Esrog and would be true regarding Matzah as well. He, it's the same thing. So the Gemara says it's the same Achlokas. Odilma, perhaps no. Shani Isa Damakra, Ariso Sechem, Ariso Sechem, Trey Zimni. On the other hand, it could very well be that Challah is special and unique. The Torah, in its articulation of an ownership requirement, it says it not once, but two times in the Torah, leading us perhaps to the conclusion that there is a special, exceptional requirement by Challah that it must be yours, and maybe it doesn't transfer and translate over to other mitzvahs like Esrog and like Matzah. So the Gemara says, even though it certainly is, at least in one area of Halacha, i.e. Challah, we could certainly say that Rav Asi is correct, that the Machlokas Rav Meir and the Chachamim as to whether there's a mitzvah for Afrashas Challah, it's true that we could say that regarding the mitzvah of challah, but not necessarily true by matzah and esrog, because it doesn't have the double language of possessive. Shel chumash tameya psula. So far, we have now established that the arla esrog is no good because you can't eat it. And we've also just discussed at length that in addition to not being able to eat it, there may be another factor which would disqualify, and that is that you don't own it. Now, by our law, the discussion doesn't even get off the ground. Because again, step number one, you have to be able to eat it. If you can't eat it, so then we have nothing more to talk about. But the question now becomes, is there also a step number two? And again, we just deliberated and debated that point for a good amount of today's daf. Shel truma tamea psula. If it is truma tamea, it's going to be pasul lais by heter achila. Again, truma tamea cannot be eaten. Vishel truma tahora lo yito. Now, when it comes to Truma Tahora, so the Mishnah says, Lechatchila, a Kohen should not be using it towards his mitzvah. B'dievet, it would be fine. Now, one has to wonder, Truma Tahora, Kohen is allowed to eat it. And as Rashi points out over here, even if the Truma Tahora is in the hands of Yisrael, so obviously Yisrael can't eat it, but he can give it to a Kohen, and the Kohen's allowed to eat it, meaning there is a Heter Achila when it comes to Truma Tahora. So it only begs the question. So by Truma Tahora, so why can't you use it for the mitzvah of Dalaminim. So pliga by Rabbi Ami v'Rav Asi chad ma'amar mimneshe machshira v'chad ma'amar mimneshe mafsida. So the Gemara gives two arguments why lechatchila the rabbis told us to ideally not use Truma Tahora for your mitzvah of Dalaminim. And that is either because you may be mafsid. Now let me go in the order of the Gemara. You may be machshir or you may be mafsid. Now machshir, what does that mean? So it means as follows, is that what's going to end up happening is that you've been soaking your lulav in water, right? The Rashi says it's based on a mission we're going to be discussing a little bit later on in this perek. So you've been soaking the lulav in the water. And now what happens is that you take the lulav out of the water. It's got liquid on it. Now you're going to be putting it next to your esrog. Remember, in order to take the dalminim, You're going to be holding them together. And now if your esrog is made up of truma tahara, so now the esrog is going to become wet. And now one step closer to becoming tameh. And as Rashi points out over here, there's a mitzvah of shmira as it relates to truma to make sure and to safeguard that the truma does not become tameh. And once it's now mukshel lekabel tuma, it's one step closer to becoming tameh. That's a concern. That's one possibility. The other possibility is you're mafsid. You're mafsid, in other words, you're handling the esrog a lot over the course of Sukkos. Every day you're picking it up, you're passing it to your friend, he's giving it back to you. You're handling it a lot. And therefore, you're going to be removing actual physical surface area of the esrog and diminishing and depleting it. And you're being mafsid. And by truma, obviously you eat it, but you can't cause a loss to the truma. So might be now you could go and shakara l'ashem chutz miklipas achitzona. So the Gemara gives a nafkamina, admittedly a bit of a stretch in terms of a nafkamina. But let's say you designated almost all of this particular esrog as truma, with exception to the outer, outer layer. The outer layer you remained a separate entity from the rest. Now, can you do that in terms of hafarshas truma? Sounds like from our Gemara, yeah, you're allowed to do that. Although admittedly, it'd be strange. Normally, typically, when you're mafish truma, you're mafish the whole fruit. But nevertheless, this would be a nafkamina. So, So if the issue is that you're machshir, so even though the outer layer is not truma, but if it becomes wet, the whole fruit now becomes mukshir lekabel tuma. If on the other hand, the issue is being mafsid, well, the only thing you're being mafsid is the exterior layer. Since that's not truma, so then there's no concern over here. This is called a nafkamina. Now, if you take it, So the Gemara says, when it comes to truma, so truma is both. It's both edible, and it also has mammon. A kohen who gives his truma over to a woman, says to her, that would work. So it's both edible, it has monetary value, it's good. Shel demai, we're up to the demai, my time de beis hillel. Now, as far as Shita's beis hillel is concerned, so kevin di bai mafkelu nachse v'havi anei v'chazi lehashanami lachem karina bay. So for beis hillel, the reason why demai esrog would be acceptable is because potentially, theoretically, you could make it yours. How so? Because we know that demai, there are leniencies, dispensations. The demai could be eaten by an ani. You could become an ani. Now, obviously, this is a little bit on the unlikely side, but in theory, you can give up all your possessions, become an ani, and now be able to eat this. Since you have the potential to eat this, it's not called a davar ha'aser, and therefore you're allowed to use it for the mitzvah of dalaminim. So the didnan, and this is a mishnah, machilas anim demai, v'esachsanya demai, ubeishamai ani lo achel demai, So this we've gone over numerous times throughout Chas, the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel subscribes to such a dispensation that the ani is allowed to eat demai. Beis Shammai does not subscribe to this dispensation, is not allowing the ani to eat demai. Just in case you're curious, we also talk about the Achsanai. Rashi describes it over here. Soldiers coming through our town, in which we are now legally bound to have to feed them. So according to Beis Hillel, you can give them demai. According to Beis Shammai, you're not allowed to give them demai. Anyway, it comes out that according to Beis Hillel, there are dispensations in terms of, in limited circumstances, there are various populations that are allowed to eat demai. And so therefore, it is considered to have a heter achila. Okay, and what's the basis of this dispensation? Rashi over here writes that because when it comes to demai, so the vast majority of the amei haaretz take off trumas and maestros. It's only a minority that don't take off trumas and maestros. The rabbinic requirement that we, even though most of the amei haaretz take off trumas and maestros, the rabbinic requirement that we still have to again take off trumas and maestros. Rashi describes it as a chumra. It's a stringency. Still, it's a rabbinic stringency. Obviously, we still have to follow it, but it is a chumrah. And as a result of that, the rabbis allowed for certain heterim, certain dispensations. And according to Beis Hillel, this being two of them. You can give it to aniyim, and you can give it to the soldiers. And since, in theory, you could become an ani, so therefore it's considered a davar hamotar. Shall Meister Sheni be Yerushalayim? So Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim, the Gemara goes on, Laman Dar Mibnei Shemachshira, Hare Machshira. Leman da'amre min meshe mafsida, hare mafsida. So the Gemara here is explaining why it is that lichatchila one should not be using Meister Sheni Yerushalayim. So for the two explanations that we gave regarding Truma, the same thing is true regarding Meister Sheni as well. Meaning there is also a requirement of Shmira of Meister Sheni. Again, you eat it, but you have to make sure that it doesn't go to loss. So if the issue is that you're being machshirit because you're making it wet, so same thing is true regarding Meister Sheni. It now is one step closer to becoming tummy. If the issue is that you're being mafsidit, so here too, you're going to be mafsidit by handling it and causing a loss to the surface area. Now bid the evid, you're going to be kashlamanda. So if the issue is that there is no heter achila, but over here by the Meister Sheni, there is a heter achila, you're of course allowed to eat it. Now, if you're telling me that there's another criteria, another prerequisite, and that is asked to have monetary value, so admittedly then our Mishnah would only be going according to the sheet of the Chachamim, not according to the sheet of Rav Meir, like we discussed earlier this morning. If in fact you subscribe that there has to be both a heter achila and there has to be a din mamon, so according to Rav Meir, Meister Sheni only has a heter achila but does not have a din mamon. So then our Mishnah would not be supporting, espousing the viewpoint of Rabbi Meir, only the Shita of the Chachamim. Okay. I know there's a little bit more to go with the daf. We're going to stop over here. Alta Chazaz, it's the blistered Esrog. We're going to start with tomorrow. In the meantime, let's quickly recap. Let's review. Our Mishnah introduced us to the Esrog. So there are multiple considerations for the Esrog. First, the universal psulim of Gazel Yavesh, Asher Irani Dachas. So the big four psulim that we've covered already by Lulav, Hadassim, and Aravos, also is true by Esrog. And now we go to the unique aspects of the disqualifications of the Esrog. So first there are the agricultural halachas of Arla, Truma Temeya, Truma Tahora, Demai, Meister Sheni. I'm just following the order of the Mishnah. So all those are agricultural considerations. And to now unify them with one basic idea, and that is that in order for the Esrog to be used for the mitzvah of Dalminim, so it has to be Lachem and it has to be yours. As a function of it being yours, you have to be able to eat it. So if the halacha does not allow me to eat it, so therefore we have not even hit step number one, and therefore it is not going to be, a kosher esrog. As a result of that, the arla esrog is no good because you can't eat it. Then on top of that, what we spent a lot of today's daf discussing is that there may be a step number two, meaning in addition to there have to be a heter achila, does it also mean that there has to be a din mamon? Does there have to be ownership? What is an example of something that you're allowed to eat but you don't own? So it's a limited example, but we found it, and that is Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim, according to Rebbe Meir, where there's a heter achila, but it's mamon gavo, it's not yours. Okay. And then a question as to whether or not there is a second criteria, and over the course of today's daf, we learned the sheet of Ravasi, is that there is, in fact, a second criteria. And that means then that according to Rebbe Meir, the Meister Sheni Yerushalayim, despite the fact that you can eat it, you cannot use it towards the mitzvah of Dalminim because you don't own it. The Mishnah then also goes on to discuss physical imperfections that exist within the Esrog. And the Mishnah gave us the listings, and tomorrow we're going to start analyzing, so I'm not going to go over the details of the Mishnah again, but tomorrow we're going to start analyzing the various physical imperfections that exist within the Esrog. Over the course of today's daf, what we discussed is, number one, maybe it's another fruit. The Gemara says it's not another fruit. And the various hints and allegations of the Pasuk that tells us that the Esrog is really the right one. And again, the Rambam writes that without the hints and allegations, we already have the Mesorah. The Gemara over here is just giving us support for the Mesorah. The Gemara talks, spoke out once again, the Asher and the Ir and Idachas, because of Ksuse Mechta Shiure. And then a good part of today's daf talks about the Esrog She'arla. Can it be used? Esrog Shel Arla cannot be used. A machlokus of why not? This is the Gemara's conclusion. The fact that you can eat it already disqualifies it. That is kuli alma, that's divrei hakol. It must have a heter achila. In addition to that, as the Gemara points out, does there also have to be bailus? Does there also have to be ownership? So according to Rav Asi, that also becomes part of the prerequisites of making a kosher esrog for dalaminim. That not only do you have to be able to eat it, but there also has to be ownership. And the Gemara spoke out three different areas in halacha where there needs to be ownership. And that is the mitzvah of esrog, the mitzvah of afreshas challah, and the mitzvah of matzah as well. even though there's no clear pasuk in the Torah that talks about an ownership requirement regarding matzah, nevertheless, it's there. Finally, the last thing that we covered today is the qualification disqualification of truma tameah. The Mishnah says it's possible. You can't eat it. Nothing to talk about over there. Nothing to deliberate over there. Truma tahora. So lichatchila, even though you're allowed to eat it, lichatchila you shouldn't use it. The Gemara gave us two reasons why. Either because you're going to be machshir lekabel tuma, or the handling is going to actually physically damage the surface area of the esrog. B'dieved, it would be fine. It both has edibility and it has monetary value. Demai, so you're allowed to use it because it is edible, at least theoretically, potentially. And finally, Meister Sheni Yerushalayim. So the lechatchili shouldn't use it because there's a mitzvah of shimur, and b'dieved it's okay because there's a heter achila, and there is also monetary value, but that's only according to the sheet of the Chachamim, not according to the sheet of Reb Meir. Adkan.